Lynn Duke saw two sides of Africa as Johannesburg bureau chief for The Washington Post. During her four-year tenure in the 1990s, she witnessed hope and triumph after the fall of South African apartheid. She also saw horror and deprivation in the battle zones of Congo Zaire and Rwanda. Her stories introduced readers to more than leaders and generals. They also revealed the lives of villagers, merchants, and struggling families. Duke was a rarity among the African press corps, an African-American woman, and her work was distinguished by a sense of connection to the continent of Africa and a simmering anger.
Anger in the sense that so much that I covered just seemed outrageous. You know, the world shouldn't be a place. I'm perhaps being pie in the sky here, but that's me. The world shouldn't be a place where hundreds of thousands of people get marooned and left to their own fate because, you know, the UN Security Council can't figure out what to do or decides there's nothing to do. And that did outrage me. It outraged me to find people suffering in the ways that I often found them. It outraged me that the likes of Mobutu could sort of ravage his country so incredibly deeply over all those decades and leave a place that was basically a shell of a nation. And so encountering that, it outraged me that the war in Angola had just left the countryside ripped. People couldn't even farm because there were landmines sown in the soil instead of seeds. In some places, could barely venture much further than the front yard of their huts because they might step on a landmine. Just seeing that kind of suffering and the real hardships that people were having to deal with, yeah, it did make me angry. So I suppose there are often times when maybe the rhythm and the tone of my pieces did convey that.
There were times when steam was, you know, coming off the copy. And I, yeah. Did your editors try to pull you back, or did they see some value in that, your passion for this story?
I think there were times when they did try to temper, because I often filed in the heat of a moment. After a day of running and gunning and reporting, I'd get right up on deadline and have to really bang it out. And sometimes the passion, the emotion was a bit too sort of in your face. And I appreciated the tempering that they did because, you know, I'm a professional journalist and I know that it's not wise to have one's emotions be conveyed so strongly in the dispatches.
But when you're covering genocide in Rwanda, when you're covering these kind of post-colonial conflicts that you covered in Zaire and later in Congo, how could you put your emotions on a shelf?
Well, you really don't. The thing that you learn to do is to manage them and sort of to calibrate them, to really learn to almost grab your soul and hold on to it, like shut it down so that you can get through a day, get through writing. And you succeed most of the time, but sometimes you don't.
You talk about in the book that at some point you felt a certain helplessness, a sense that you had crossed a line because you had gotten so close to the story.
Yeah.
How did that affect the way that you approached your job in those later years when you started to feel that sense of futility?
There was always relief from those feelings, and the relief often came in South Africa, which I wanted to turn to because the South Africa story was very different from the story in Zaire or Angola or Rwanda. The South Africa story remained for much of the time I was there a story of momentum and hopefulness and progress, you know, like the Africa feel-good story. I was there during most of the term of Nelson Mandela, the first democratic president of South Africa after the end of apartheid. And it was just this incredibly heady period of the Constitution being rewritten, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission trying to set the record straight and dig out the true history of a country whose history basically had been lies, to find out who killed and who tortured and why, to bring some sense of solace to the victims. The economy was sort of slowly being restructured. There was this real sense of hopefulness among so many South Africans who were very patiently awaiting the promises of democracy. And having covered South Africa a bit in 1990, shortly after Mandela's release, and then in 94 during the elections, I was really infected with that sense of hopeful momentum. Just flying back to Joburg after being in Zaire or something was like, yes. It was like not just that the runway lights worked and that there were highways and, you know, sort of a sense of normalcy for me. Just it was the antidote in a way. You know, Mandela and his country and what they were attempting to do was sort of a spiritual antidote for this real heavy weight and sense of futility that I did often feel elsewhere.
Thank you for joining us, Lynn.
Thank you, Michelle.
Lynn Duke's book is called Mandela, Mobutu, and Me, A Newswoman's African Journey.